What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dynasty Rankings Podcast. I'm your host, Nate List. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged Jew. And of course, with me is Alexander McKenzie. You can find him on Twitter at Jacked Up on Mountain Dew. Alexander, our last show on YouTube, for those of you that are spectators there, and for those of you that listen to it on whatever podcast network you may listen to it on, did really, really well. So obviously, the subject matter as we enter we're approaching the middle of the season is very palpable for people, because there's a lot of people that are in a position where they're trying to buy players as they position themselves to make a run at the playoffs and a title. You've got the guys, as we worked with last week, who have rosters that are falling apart. They know it. We know it. The league knows it. And it's time for them to make some moves. And this week, I kind of feel like we're sort of in that sweet spot. We've got, it looks like, seven players that we're going to go over on this episode. Some receivers, some running backs. Not going to get into too many quarterbacks. Not going to get into too many tight ends. We can get into some of those in the future. But the players that we want to talk about today, I think, all have value to some degree. And whether you're a rebuilder or a contender, I think a lot of these guys span kind of all the way across the spectrum. And with that said, the players that are on this list, what's very interesting is you and I are going to get into some of this. I think that people are going to have a realization about the difference between the wide receiver one in an offense, a high-end wide receiver two in an offense, and a wide receiver one in sort of a middling offense, or somebody that's just not consistently producing and doesn't have a stronghold on that wide receiver one job going forward. And there's a lot of receivers like that in the league, believe it or not. So let's start right at the top, Alexander. Chris Godwin is a player who I think for a lot of guys that play Dynasty Fantasy Football, they believe that Godwin is kind of long in the tooth. The surprising factor is he's only 27 and a half years old. For some reason, though, he appears to be classified and treated as a guy who's approaching 30, but he's very, very far from it. In terms of value going forward, current value as it stands in the dynasty landscape, where are you at on Chris Godwin, and how should fantasy teams play this?
I think fantasy teams should play this as someone you should buy across the board. I mean, this is one of those guys that could be like one of, if you're a rebuilder, he could be like sort of like the starting piece that can, he's 27. He's going to be 28 years old. Easily one of the potential trade candidates if the Buccaneers, you know, if they end up tanking, or not tanking, but they start continue to lose games. I think they've lost two straight now. He's consistently shown he can be an efficient receiver in a good offense. He's wide receiver 10 versus man, wide receiver 12 in red zone targets. So regardless of what everyone thinks about whether or not his age is holding him back, which he's not really that old. We've got so many 30-year-old wide receiver ones right now in 2023. It's insane. So I think Godwin's one of those guys that whether or not Mike Evans moves on or is traded, or Godwin himself is traded to another team like a contender that needs a wide receiver, he's one of those guys that can be a focal point of either a contender or a rebuilder roster. And these are, again, this is one of those guys that's super efficient, has done it in the past. He's got great metrics. He's done it. There's no signs of regression. We all knew that he was going to slightly regress due to the quarterback play, but it's not due to him. Again, wide receiver 10 versus man, and wide receiver 12 in red zone targets. He just hasn't got the touchdowns that Mike Evans has seen.
And think about this inept Tampa Bay offense. And while still being inept and not going into how to explain how EPA works again, he's still a top 13 player in EPA, despite the fact that this isn't a team that's in the red zone all game long. And this isn't a team that's making big splash plays game over game. But again, you go to player profile, you look at his route win rate, still top 12 in the league, as you alluded to, still an efficient player, target share still pushing 25%, which by all accounts is very, very good. And then what's really interesting, as we scroll down further down this list, Chris Godwin, let me zoom this baby in for you. Why is this ad overtaking this? Damn you, Google. Chris Godwin is viewed as the wide receiver 39 in Dynasty, next to Amari Cooper, who's 29.4, next to Deontay, who we both like. Again, another value option right there. Next to Jerry Jeudy, who's 24 and a half and sinking like a rock in the ocean. And then, you know, it's really weird. He's literally, what, three spots off Adam Thielen, who's having sort of this single year resurgence at 33 and a half years old. So if you want to understand how people view Chris Godwin, again, and this is fantasycalc.com, just go to the website and look at who he's adjacent to. That should tell you everything you need to know. These are people that everyone else is mostly low on. And so he's sitting here at this range of value. It says basically a 2025 future first. That's probably a late first. Now, I think that there's a way that you can take a second and a projected player and probably move your way into a guy like him if you were looking to do that. And as you mentioned, Chris Godwin still heavily targeted thus far this year. 11, 7, 12 in these last couple weeks, 8 prior to it. Again, playing with Mike Evans, playing with, you know, other talent around him. It's not over for Chris Godwin by any means. And it seems like his value at this point in time, I just wrote an article about him on Patreon, and it seems like his value right now is about as good as it has ever been.
Yeah, I agree. It's crazy. He was, you know, widely viewed as an extremely talented wide receiver. Again, that was with Tom Brady, right? And like 17 points per game, I believe, and then his peak with Tom Brady. And again, he's 27 years old. It's not like he's one of these 30-year-old wide receivers. He's widely viewed as like a 30-year-old wide receiver, but he's still got a lot of years left on his ability, potential, you know, end of his prime here. And again, reference that he could potentially be a trade candidate, again, be put on a contending team, and produce significantly well. Any of these wide receiver needy teams, I think, like sometimes the Chiefs, if they want a veteran presence to go get someone like that, could easily be a team that he can get, go on and easily be the wide receiver one. It's just, there's no signs of regression. He's still at a great age. And yeah, like you alluded to, his value could not be better. He's probably one of the best values right now in Dynasty.
It's shocking. And I'm a huge fan of Godwin, and he's just been consistent year over year over year. And he kind of gets a little bit of that sort of Tyler Lockett-esque, you know, sort of respect from people around the league. You know, guys like Elijah Moore. I know a lot of people are high on Elijah Moore, but if I could do Elijah Moore in a third to move into Chris Godwin, I would do it instantaneously. I'm not a big fan of what's going on with the Browns. I don't love that system. I love the player. He's much younger than a guy like Chris Godwin. He's still getting requisite target opportunity, but not doing that much with it. If you're a team that's looking to contend and still wants a couple years of value out of this guy, there's 2-3 years worth of value with Chris Godwin. And if we've seen anybody who looks like him, whether it's Keenan Allen, whether it's, you know, any number of players, the style of play that he brings to the table is one that ages very well at the NFL level. So I think that it's hard to not be high on Chris Godwin when the cost of him is just so damn low. Mm-hmm. So here's a player that really hasn't come up on any of our episodes. And I think amongst the rookies that were drafted in this class, he's probably gotten some of the least hype considering he was a second round pick. Jaden Reed, Green Bay Packers. Really interesting because I think Christian Watson was the guy who came in this year, had some injuries. We were waiting to see him. Had that end of last season that looked really, really great. And everybody thought, look, he's just going to usher himself right back into being the number one in this offense. And for that reason, Jaden Reed, and with Romeo Doubs there, Jaden Reed has sort of been second fiddle or kind of not really recognized for being the draft capital athletic specimen that he is. And here he is now, widely available in most leagues because he hasn't really flashed yet. What should people be doing for Jaden Reed? And is he the type of guy that if Dynasty owners are making trades, they should try to squeeze him into a deal before he does anything of relevance?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, he has a great breakout age, like 98 percentile, right? You saw the profile here. Player profile has gotten best comparable to Stephon Diggs. He's got size, decent size, great speed. And he's also wide receiver 8 in route win rate. Sorry.
It's hard to say.
And then wide receiver 9 versus man. He's also wide receiver 4 in red zone targets. What's buoyed his production so far that's keep him kind of with a pulse right now with 9.3 fantasy points per game is he's one of the top receivers right now in touchdowns. So, and with that, he's still wide receiver one in red zone targets. This is a young offense. We talked about Christian Watson, who has struggled with some injuries here. I think there's still ample opportunity for one of these wide receivers to kind of take over this team. And again, one of the youngest rosters, they're trying to figure out what they're doing with this offense. I think Jaden Reed is one of these guys that if you're a rebuilder, you absolutely should sneak into a deal when you're selling some of these veteran running backs that you're trying to get off of. Absolutely, like sell, like if you're like 1-5 and you or 1-6 at this point, and you've got Kamara, sell him and then just throw Jaden Reed in there. Just say, hey, really, it's 9.3 fantasy points per game. He's, you know, he's not really doing anything. He's not getting a lot of targets. And then obviously he's one of those guys that has the depth of target at wide receiver 13. He's got the route win rate and he's great versus man. Those are all the signs of a very talented wide receiver that really hasn't done anything because this Green Bay Packers offense has just frankly not been very good.
It's not been good. And you could see here on his PFF data that right now on the deep targets, 24% of his total deep targets, which is 7, and 24.1%, basically identical numbers between the deep and medium range targets. And if we go back to his college profile, 2021, which was his biggest year, 17.4 yards per reception. So the big play is in him, right? I mean, it's a guy that runs a 4.45, 190 pounds. You alluded to the Stephon Diggs comp. There's a lot of pluses to this situation. And as we've seen in many cases before, wide receivers ascending the depth chart aren't shocking. Puka Nacua, who was literally hyped by nobody, is outplaying Cooper Kupp right now and outplaying essentially 98% of wide receivers in the league. So it's not crazy to think that whether it's later this year as this offense begins to develop or it's into next year that a guy like this really starts to break out. But he has had some games thus far this year with some targets earlier in the year, 8 targets, 7 targets. He's got 3 touchdowns on the season, as you've mentioned, which have really supported some of that production. But he is battling with incumbents, and that does make it difficult. Romeo Doubs is not a bad player necessarily. Obviously, Christian Watson coming back, they want to give him his opportunities. But there's really no reason to believe that we couldn't look up in 2024 and this be the wide receiver one in Green Bay. Like, there's absolutely no reason to believe that that's an impossible task. Again, second round pick, well within side the realm of positive hit rate with these guys. And as you mentioned, you look at all the other markers. The breakout age is great. The target share is great. The dominator is great. He's flashed the big play capability. He's being used in that facet thus far in the NFL. So I really like him. What's interesting, though, and we're on the second page here of fantasycalc.com, Romeo Doubs, wide receiver 48. Jaden Reed, wide receiver 54, currently sitting next to Jonathan Mingo, Curtis Samuel, Joshua Palmer. Some of these guys are starting to flash a little bit. Again, Elijah Moore in that range, Gabe Davis. Like, I don't know who's still high on Gabe Davis, but I mean, I would be willing to move off Gabe Davis for Jaden Reed on rosters where I really didn't need, if best ball is where Gabe Davis shines, okay? You're not starting him in head-to-head leagues unless your roster is just in shambles or it's bye weeks. We know what Gabe Davis is. In fact, one of the biggest Gabe Davis truthers on social media wrote a 7,000-word response to somebody today, which makes me think about this, and used him as sort of one of the members of the conversation. But it's basically over for Gabe Davis. We know what he is, right? He's like less consistent Mike Williams. But in best ball, even less consistent Mike Williams is very valuable. Jaden Reed could be a full-time contributor in the future. So I think it's guys like that. If Jalin Hyatt pops, I'm not the biggest Jalin Hyatt fan. If Jalin Hyatt starts to pop a little bit and you can make a play to move into Jaden Reed, I think any number of these guys I would have the confidence in moving into him for. I just think when you look at him at the wide receiver 54, and again, sitting next to Jonathan Mingo, neither guy's really done anything yet. But if you had to bet on the two, for some people, it might be a coin toss. I just think that Jonathan Mingo, for everything that we don't love about what's happening with Quentin Johnston, teaser, going to get to him in a little bit. I think Jaden Reed has validated more of those things that we didn't see from Quentin Johnston, where Jonathan Mingo is kind of the same in many regards to what we've seen from Quentin Johnston, where you have to sort of convince yourself of a number of items. We really haven't seen that high-end performance yet. So it might be a push for some. I personally like Jaden Reed, and again, at wide receiver 54, that's getting pretty inexpensive.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, Jaden Reed versus Jonathan Mingo, Jaden Reed is winning routes, and that's so signs of an elite route runner. Again, he could be the wide receiver one in Green Bay, and those type of receivers that ascend to, you know, that top 15, top 20, even top 10 conversations, they all are great and known for their route running. So he's showcased it in college, and now he's showcasing it in the NFL. I just think he just needs more opportunity, and obviously this offense needs to get better.
It definitely needs to get better. But yeah, that's a great point. You know, you look at these guys, if you're going to bet on something, but you have to just bet on the basic skill level that they bring to the table: target separation, route running prowess. Did you do it in college? Are you a good athlete? Is there a path to targets? And with a guy like Puka Nacua, there very much was, and he found it. And we don't know what the end game is for the quarterback player, the situation necessarily in Green Bay. But again, I refuse to be surprised if we look up in 2024 and Jaden Reed is the wide receiver to own in Green Bay and everybody has this aha moment. By the way, I think J.J. Zacharyson was really high on Jaden Reed as well. So I'm going to go ahead and name drop him, because if J.J. likes him, everybody should like him. First running back on the list. Now, you and I had talked about him a couple of weeks ago, because we believe, based on usage, based on performance, and I know everybody wants to bring up rush yards over expectation. Again, there was a period of time where everybody was a submarine expert. Then everybody was a yards over expectation expert. So I appreciate that everybody has, you know, worn many hats this year. 2023 has been a year of many hats. But Kyren Williams has overwhelmed thus far this year. And you and I had advocated that he's a guy that spending a second round pick for, if you were a contender, wouldn't necessarily be a lost cause. And I don't necessarily think it is a lost cause to this point still, but Kyren Williams, 23 years old, should have never ascended to where he's at currently. What are dynasty owners doing with Kyren Williams right now? What's the expectation going forward?
So Kyren Williams, like you alluded to, has played fantastic, but it also is because he's number one. He was the number one running back before injury in snap share. So he's on the field literally almost every play. And so he's getting the most opportunity out of any running back. Not even CMC is getting this kind of opportunity in comparison. So he is playing it fantastic because he's getting ample opportunity, and this Rams offense is way better than we had expected. You alluded to Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp's back. Kyren Williams is playing in an offense that's doing well, and he's getting all the touches. The problem is, again, we kind of talked about it, is a fifth round draft capital, kind of a sub athlete, you know, sub 200 pound back. Again, for if you're in redraft, or not redraft, if you're in dynasty and you're trying to win now and you're a contender, this is the type of guy I still would throw a second round pick at, because the latter half of the season with this type of opportunity that he's given, there's no one in this backfield that is going to compete with his touches, especially how well he has played throughout the season so far. But long term, this is the kind of guy with the fifth round draft capital, with this kind of profile, already showing some injury, gaining some injuries here, with so much opportunity, that is a candidate for being kind of jumped by the draft. They jump and get a second round pick on a running back, or a third round pick, someone with sort of elite size speed, great college production, could end up being a timeshare in this offense. And Kyren Williams is sort of at his peak value in 2023 versus 2024 and going on so forth.
Well, and the biggest concern we should bring up here is he's going to miss the next 4 weeks on IR. So that's really at play. And as we're entering, you're basically pushing to the playoffs right now. So him coming back, he's going to come back right in time for the playoffs. Now, my statement about not feeling bad about a second round pick is in prospect to the idea that he's going to come back when the playoffs are there. Now, if you paid a second for him and you're hurt by his lack of production, which again was buoyed by immense opportunity, then guess what? This is the game of fantasy football that we play. This is the risk reward that you take. But a second round pick has such a high bust rate most times. And if you're a contender, that second round pick is closer to a third round pick at this point. So are you really upset that you gave it up for Kyren Williams? He likely has value next year as well to some degree. I don't know what this Rams team does in the future. But you're also in a position where you can still flip Kyren Williams when he gets closer to coming back if you want to get out of him, if this has affected your team so much so. With that being said, Kyren Williams is not a player that I want to own. Like, I wanted to own him as a rental that had 2023 potential, had some carryover into 2024, and I knew that I was risking everything to win a title. But by risking everything, I was giving up a second-round pick, and again, that is the 209, 210, 11, 12, you're basically pushing into, again, the third round. So no real risk there. But with him, it's like, yes, he's been productive, but has he been that much more productive on a per-touch basis than every other player in the league on average? Well, yards created would say, yeah, he's top 15 at the position, or top six overall, top 15 per touch. Obviously, his EPA has been ridiculous, but that Rams offense has been pushing downfield, putting him in great position. So he's not a player I want to own, okay? But he's running the routes. He's getting the opportunity when he's on the field. So if you own him and you're a contender, what are you going to do? You're probably going to hold him and ride it out and hope that he comes back in the playoffs and gets the same level of opportunity, because really, he's battling with nobody. If you're a rebuilder and there's a contender, I still think it's entirely possible to get a second-round pick despite the fact that he's going to miss the next 4 weeks. So if you're looking to add what should be a late second and you want to make that argument with a contender to get him off your roster, I get it. He's not a guy I want to hold into the future. He's a fifth-round pick. He's not athletic. He's undersized, and he's been outperforming expectation on a team that could look like a fucking grenade hit it next year when it's totally different. It's entirely possible that this whole scene changes. So I am low on Kyren Williams, but if we look at him on fantasy calc, what's really interesting, I was going through here, Kyren Williams is still the RB20 on there next to Joe Mixon, Raheem Mostert, Javonte Williams, close to David Montgomery. Now, I don't think that would be an interesting one. How much time is Montgomery missing right now?
He might be missing another 4 weeks as well. I think is he on IR?
Yeah, this is not the type of question that you ask live, but the show sheet is pretty barren. Because I can't remember if David Montgomery went to IR or not. I know that Gibbs got the whole run last week, and shockingly, Jahmyr Gibbs, multiple targets, rushing well, looks like the player that we thought he was going to be. You know, and I think that sort of re-inspired some owners. But yeah, David Montgomery was injured, and I think he didn't go to IR, did he? He's coming back, right?
No, he didn't go. He's coming back, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he was inactive for week 7. I think it's questionable if he's going to be back for week 8. Yeah, I don't think that a trade like that is possible. If there's any way you could swindle your way into David Montgomery from Kyren Williams, I would be all over that, because Montgomery's just an infinitely better runner overall. But I think the real play is if you can get your hands on a second-round pick, I would definitely do it. And I don't know how many weeks you have before your playoffs start. Most people's playoffs start week, 14? So I think 14 for most leagues is 14, 15, and 16. Some leagues have shifted because we're in an 18-game season. So you're going to have a few weeks of production when he comes back, if he can reestablish himself, if you want to move off of him. Or again, if you're a contender and you want to roll with it, you're going to have a better understanding of kind of who he is. But again, a great example, look at Ramondre Stevenson right now and sort of the way that that has all unraveled. A fifth-round guy that was at one point being valued as a top 10 dynasty asset. And it just feels like sort of the wheels have fallen off of that one as well.
Oh, no, I think it's one of those things. Yeah, if you can move into a more solidified player with a better profile or better contract situation, I think, yeah, you definitely would be what I would do if you're.
All right. Well, there's nothing exciting about talking about Kyren Williams. Now, there is something exciting to talk about with a guy like Devonta Smith. So I'm going to bring Devonta Smith up on the screen because this is a player that coming into the season from a value perspective, from an upside perspective, it was immense. Now, he was coming off of a 15-point-per-game season, top 14 last year, which is good, not great, but it was enough for people to push him into the top 10. Then we look at him this year, started off the season with a bang, 10 targets to start the season, 17.7 fantasy points, then 23.1 fantasy points. And then the real A.J. Brown, I think it happened about the time that A.J. Brown was on the sidelines complaining to Jalen Hurts that he wasn't being targeted. And ever since then, A.J. Brown has been on absolute God mode in Philly.
Absolutely. A.J. Brown is at a historic level right now. But yeah, Devontae, wide receiver 9 in deep targets, wide receiver 12 in air yards, wide receiver 3 in routes run. All those allude to someone that is always on the field, is going to get targets downfield, could have a propensity to get a touchdown. He's shown you already in the first 2 weeks that he can be one of those guys that can produce at a high level, get high target share. I just think A.J. Brown is playing at an elite level, and this is kind of, you know, we've talked about this pre-show. This is kind of one of those players you do want to buy, but you have to like know what you're buying, right? You're buying a receiver, a potential wide receiver, fringe wide receiver, one, wide receiver two, that's competing with a top five alpha in the league with that is now commanding a 30% target share. And so now Devontae Smith has to operate at a lower level. And he, you know, at some view, you could view it as like Devontae Smith sort of exceeded expectations with A.J. Brown being year one in this Eagles offense.
Well, they were basically neck and neck last year with per game targets, with overall targets. But I think we have to bring up A.J. Brown's season on the screen because I think this really needs to be put into context, like what's happening right now with A.J. Brown and Philly. Now, the difference in targets between these two players is about 75 targets so far on the year. And by the way, A.J. Brown is 26 years old, so a year and a half younger than Chris Godwin, who I said was already pretty young. Skip the first 2 weeks of the year. Then it's been 22 points, 38.5, 18.7, 20, and 29.7. I mean, he is absolutely shredding anybody and everybody right now. And it sort of brings me back to the subject, and I want to bring up this scoring setting here. It brings me back to the subject of when we entered this offseason, there's been this whimsical theory and belief out there that you just want to get your hands on that wide receiver that's opposite an elite wide receiver because they're going to take all the coverage. Well, guess what? Sometimes they also take all the targets. And you look at these guys, look at who's number one in the league on a per-game basis right now, Tyreek Hill. I love Jalen Waddle, but you don't love Jalen Waddle's production right now. You know, look at Jamar Chase. Where's Jamar Chase? Top 8 in the league. Where's T. Higgins? How far do I have to scroll down? T's been hurt, but where do you have to go to find T. Higgins? A.J. Brown, number 3 in the league. I thought that we wanted to have Devonta Smith. Where's Devonta Smith right now? You have to scroll way down here to find Devonta Smith. And then you look at a guy, we're going to get to another player in a minute, in Jordan Addison, who's playing opposite Justin Jefferson. I just think that what you brought up earlier, and I want to add some context to it, you have to understand what you're buying. And I led off at the top of this. What you're buying with a guy like Devonta Smith is one of the highest-end wide receiver twos in the league who, when the wide receiver one in the offense is injured, can function as a wide receiver one. And one of the reasons he's one of the highest upside wide receiver twos is because on any given week, he can also give you wide receiver one production. Those players are oftentimes more valuable than the de facto air quote wide receiver ones in other given offenses, a la Terry McLaurin, a la Cortland Sutton, right? Like they're just Marquise Brown. They're just more valuable than number ones in other offenses. And that's why we like Jalen Waddle, because we hope that if there's a game, he could just get, he's just trying to get in and get a nipple. He's just a runt. He's just get a little milk while Tyreek's getting all of it. Give him an opportunity, right? He's working his way in there. But this is the same thing with Keenan Allen. He's a vacuum. DJ Moore, he's a vacuum. And so I think people need to start paying more attention to what it is that they're signing up for. Like, we're looking, let's go to Fantasy Calc for a second. Now, Devonta Smith shouldn't fall off the face of the earth. And right now they have him on the as wide receiver 14. In the last 30 days, he's lost 970 points. So that's essentially a fall from, in this case, it's about 1,000. That's a fall from about the wide receiver 9. So he's fallen about 6 spots from Jalen Waddle's range. But he's still so much more valuable than investing in a number of these sort of other players. Amari Cooper, again, Jerry Jeudy, who's the Cortland Sutton tether, DeAndre Hopkins, Adam Thielen, name it, Treylon Burks, DeAndre Hopkins, name any of these guys. He's just more valuable than all of them. But at the same time, this is the risk of signing up for a high-end wide receiver too, who's tethered to an elite wide receiver 1.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think that, you know, and it's evident by, you know, historic, like, just the target shares that they're going to get. Like, it's the targets are never going to be there enough for them to produce both, other than maybe last year they were neck and neck, but it's very rare to see a situation where two wide receivers operate at wide receiver 1 levels.
But even, okay, let's do this, because even last year, if we look at total fantasy points scored, even last year, come on, cycle, baby. Even last year, when you look at where these guys ended up, I understand Devonta Smith was top 9 in overall scoring. Let's go to points per game because it's just better to look at. Devonta Smith was the wide receiver 14. He had 136 targets, okay? And A.J. Brown had, what, 146. So essentially 10 more. If I sort by targets and we scroll down, Devonta Smith was still fringy top 10. That's a lot of targets for a wide receiver too, because look at the other guys in this range. Pittman, 141. He's a wide receiver 1 in his offense. Jamar, 134, wide receiver 1 in his offense. Christian Kirk, 133, wide receiver 1 in his offense. Amari Cooper, the number 1 in his offense. Really, you have to fall all the way to essentially Mike Evans at 127, who only played 15 games, by the way, to sort of figure out that to get to that level of target share as the wide receiver 2 in an offense, that's a very rare case. And that doesn't happen often. Historically, wide receiver 2 on average, league-wide, is about 88 to 90 targets on a given year. So again, if we were to scroll down to your typical wide receiver 2, Alan Lazard, 100, Jerry Jeudy, 100, Jacoby, 96, you know, Gabe Davis, 93, like, that is the typical number 2 in the league. And obviously, this is buoyed by injuries. It's buoyed by everything. So, again, don't get caught up in the idea that a player like Devonta Smith is going to run away with a job when he's got a guy like that next to him. But with that being said, you would necessarily prefer him to about half the wide receiver ones in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just, yeah, I think it's already evident. And like the points, like when given, again, like we alluded to, we're talking about Jordan Addison here in a second. When given the opportunity, when the wide receiver one is out, they could produce at an elite wide receiver one potential, like a top 5, you know, top 3 type potential when given the opportunity. And then they could do it on their own and outplay some of these wide receiver ones on these anemic offenses.
Yes. Yep. Then that's what it is. And that's kind of the way it needs to be discussed. Now, you mentioned Jordan Addison. For those of you that are listening to this podcast, you just witnessed the Jordan Addison coming out party. He's been good throughout the year. Interestingly enough, his target share was, I think, behind KJ Osborne by just a half a percent. It was like 15.7% target share. So he's 15-1. I don't know if this has been updated yet. But yeah, exactly. And KJ Osborne was about 16.5, which is really weird. But last night's game, when you see these guys performing, he comes out and absolutely shreds. What was his final stat line? Did you see it? Six
it's
for
like 20. It was like, yeah, it's 29 fantasy points, but it was like six for,
oh, yeah,
seven for like 129 and 2 touchdowns, I believe.
Yeah, he had 2 like scores. So, but nonetheless, and I think he had 8 targets, so he's either 7 for 7 or 8 for 7. Very efficient night, and that's kind of what we would expect from a guy like this. It's kind of in that Deontay Johnson, Keenan Allen cut of cloth. But when you look at his value proposition right now, obviously he's going to be flying up the board sooner rather than later on sites like Fantasy Calc and amongst your dynasty leagues. I have a little less confidence in Jordan Addison than I do Devonta Smith, because Devonta Smith is tethered to a quarterback that just signed a long-term deal. I don't know what's happening with Kirk Cousins. Prior to last night, I know that Kirk Cousins was on the trade block potentially. We didn't know what was going to happen. We know that Justin Jefferson is going to be a 170-target guy year in and year out. That number could come down a little bit, maybe into the 160s if he plays a full 17 games, but that is still so many targets. And the other thing is, people always do this target division. You know what? I'm going to rant. People always do this target division thing where they're like, look, the team's got 500 targets. You'll give 100 to this guy, 100 to that guy. What you're not factoring is, what's the guy's catch rate typically? Okay, he gets 125 targets, but his catch rate's only 63%. So we've got to cut 42 targets off there. How many off-target throws is he going to receive, right? How many, like, there's just so many other factors that go into this sort of slice of pie that people like to delve into. But with that being said, Jordan Addison offers so much more upside than a lot of these other players that are kind of next to him. I mean, we see George Pickens starting to show himself right now, but we know that Kenny Pickett's not that good. And we know that Deontay Johnson is kind of on the way back in. I like George Pickens. I think he's starting to reveal himself more and more like an alpha. But I think if Jordan Addison was getting an equal, you know, if he was a 23, 24% target share and he was running a much stronger amount of routes run, if he was getting 8 targets a game, 7 targets a game, it would be really hard to pass on a guy like that, knowing what his skill set is and knowing that it's not predicated on winning in an explosive downfield manner. Again, those are always going to be the guys that we have this immense allure for, but I think that Addison has a game that's going to age well, and clearly he's got the skills, and this Monday night game was sort of the coming out party.
Absolutely, yeah. If you could still buy him for, I mean, obviously after this game, I don't think you can get him for cheap at this point. I think he will continue to trend up, especially with Jefferson on IR. I would argue potentially that, you know, if the hype train continues super high, there's an opportunity to maybe move into a player where you could get, you know, more of an alpha if he jumps that high. Because, you know, you bring up Devontae Smith. Like, how high was Devontae Smith after the end of 2022? And, like, what kind of players could you have moved into if you have potentially could have gotten an actual alpha in an offense buoyed with, like, maybe a first or second round pick?
I mean, he was top 10. You could have moved into a number of players right now. I'm sure last year where he was, probably, you know, CeeDee Lamb was getting within reach, even though he performed really well. But again, Amon-Ra St. Brown was probably a guy that people would have considered, because the idea was that Devonta Smith was going to leapfrog A.J. Brown. It wasn't just that it was a coming out party. It was that there was this perceived belief that ascension was undeniable, that it was going to persist. And obviously, a cap has since been put on that opportunity. I was pulling up some recent Jordan Addison trades. So these were pulled off today. This was 2-4 total assets, full point PPR, 2 quarterbacks, so essentially a super flex. And league sizes are 12-14. It looks like Addison and 2 firsts for Justin Jefferson. Addison, a future first and a third for CeeDee Lamb. Addison and a third for Dak Prescott. Ah, boy. I'm trying to find one here that really liked. So you got Jordan Addison, Kareem Hunt, and a second for Chris Olave. But as you and I were talking about, I like Olave a lot. But it's hard to say. He probably has a few more traits and a few more opportunities in the offense that he's in to maintain being closer to a true number one than this, like, really high upside wide receiver two. But again, like, here's a start 10, 12 team, 2 quarterback league, Bryce Young for Jordan Addison. So straight across for a quarterback in basically a super flex format. And then Addison in a first for Ayuk and a second. Jordan Addison straight up for a first and a second. So, I mean, he's already going for future first, future second. It's a good combination. Depends on what you're trying to move into there. So I think we're seeing his value climb, and Jefferson's going to miss more time. So who knows how much higher he could go. But going back to a number of the statements that have been made on this show today, we know that Addison has value and we know sort of what the perceived ceiling is, but I'm not going to go out to best case scenario, which has only been achieved by Emmanuel Sanders three times, which is 135, 140 target range for a wide receiver too. Again, Juju Smith, once upon a time with pass happy Ben Roethlisberger, did it as well, but it's a very, very rare group when you're banking on a lot of targets. Again, he's super efficient though, so I will make the case that it's nice to play counter Justin Jefferson if you're ultra efficient. It's not fun to play counter Tyreek Hill when you're doing the same thing, but Tyreek Hill is just doing it infinitely better than you are, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah, and again, I think he's super efficient. It's somebody you want to roster. I think that there, but I firmly believe there's a potential that he could jump, like just like Devontae Smith, into this top 10 range where you could move into an actual alpha that continues to have this those monsters target shares year to year. But yeah.
All right. Enough about Jordan Addison. We got to go into another player here. We're going to move positions once again. Let's go back to the running back position, because there's a running back that I think in Dynasty, for a lot of people, there were sort of some ups and downs this offseason, whether they believed that the potential to really hit was there. And this season, he's been pretty good, and the opportunity has been very solid for him in many regards. That's James Cook of the Buffalo Bills. I mean, again, slightly undersized, and that was the knock on him, but been reasonably productive since coming into the league. What's the forecast for James Cook going forward? And Dynasty owners currently, what should they be doing with James Cook?
It's really kind of like, I feel like if you are a James Cook holder owner, I would definitely be someone who's holding on to him, because he's extremely efficient. The knocks on him obviously are the sub 200 pounds. But there's also another player that's sub 200 pounds that we all love, in Jahmyr Gibbs. And we all love that receiving profile and stuff like that. Well, you've got literally the number one, the RB6 in receiving yards, and he's the RB1 in yards per reception right now, James Cook. And while I'll be in the RB23, in snap share, he's just, it is extremely, extremely efficient player. He's RB8 in yards per touch. I think he's always going to have that upside of the receiving game. I think really if you're banking on touchdowns, I think he's just more of a high-end RB2 that can sustain this over time. I think sort of what, you know, Aaron Jones's role has kind of been relegated to now is this kind of, you know, in between the 20s type usage, and then maybe there's a bell cow back, but, you know, James Cook is that guy that's being used heavily to get them there and used in the receiving game. I just think a target is, you know, what is it, like 2.3 carries. He's super efficient with his targets. That this is someone that I definitely would buy, especially being 24 years old. He may never get the touchdowns we want, but I think, again, this is one of those guys you can buy where people are kind of low because he's not going to get the touchdowns like all these bigger backs will get. But he's super, super efficient with his touches, and he's heavily used in the passing game.
It's hard to knock. Where is this? Do I have the sign behind me? God damn it. That guy was right. I've got a sign behind me from this guy, Johnny fucking Strawberry. Hold on. I'm going to pull this out. Johnny Strawberry, this son of a bitch, replied to one of my tweets once upon a time. Let's see if we can read this thing. What did it say? I think James Cook will be used as a part-time slot receiver in a top three passing offense. He has the upside to shoulder the load should Singletary not be re-signed. His brother is Dalvin Cook. That's one I'm just simply not overthinking. Damn it! Was he right?
I don't know if he's necessary. I mean, he is Dalvin Cook's brother. He got that right. I don't think he'll ever be. Potentially, the worry is, I don't know if he'll ever be Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook had a little bit more weight. I mean, but again, he's still, it doesn't really matter so far here. He's extremely efficient on yards per touch, yards per carry. Yards per reception is fantastic. He's number one in yards per reception. I talked about that earlier. I just think he's one of those guys that's always going to be a big part of this offense. He's got second round draft capital. He's got great speed. I just think he's super underrated. All the things that we love about Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, he's doing it right now in the league too. And it's just, and you get him at RB 17 value. Like he will always be fighting probably with a bigger back that may take red zone touches, but I think he's so good that the team may not invest a lot of draft capital in another running back, especially in a pass heavy, you know, Josh Allen offense.
It's probably fair. I mean, it's probably fair to say. I just pulled up some of the trades with him recently. Right here, I mean, this, geez, a first and a second for James Cook.
Whoa.
I would be, I mean, it depends. If you're, I guess you're for a contender and you're looking to sell, that's a 12-team start 10 league. James Cook for Jake Ferguson in a second. You know, it's funny because these are actual trades that went down. None of these are hypothetical. James Cook for Marquise Brown in a start 11 league. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head here. The favoritism for him, despite the fact that the opportunity's been there, the red zone work, maybe not necessarily, especially with a guy like Josh Allen vulturing, but here he is at RB 17, right next to Montgomery, Stevenson. It's really interesting because Montgomery's been great, but he's essentially in this odd backfield with Jahmyr Gibbs. We don't really know when Gibbs is going to get his opportunities if Montgomery's healthy, but he's adjacent to guys like Stevenson who are falling, adjacent to Kyron Williams who's injured and sort of falling, Joe Mixon who's falling, Raheem Mostert who's falling because we know that Devon Achane is playing well, and Mostert's been good too, but he's older at 31 and a half. I mean, Javonte Williams falling. Like, he's the one guy that shouldn't necessarily be falling. It's really just sort of a respect thing with him. And so I think for that matter, like, he is a value in dynasty leagues. He does have the contract length behind him. He is being productive. And yeah, there may be a bigger back that comes in. Who knows? Who knows if it's not Derrick Henry next year, right? Like, it's entirely possible that one of these two things takes place. But yeah, I think looking at his value, RB 17, the opportunities there. I mean, I'd prefer him to Kyron Williams all day at this point in dynasty. In 2023, dynasty. Hard to say if Kyron comes back, continues to get the workload. But in dynasty, I think that's a fairly unquestionable statement that you would necessarily prefer him to anyone in that group. And again, looking at those trades that we were looking at, if you're getting a first and a second for James Cook, I mean, that's pretty hard not to pass on him knowing that there is a bit of a cap to what he's doing. And then, again, we can also pull this up while we're talking. If we go to sort of opportunity usage thus far in the league, cycle this to week 7, update that. Look at RB target share right now. I think they're on the bottom side. Buffalo Bills are bottom 7 in the league at 14.4%. target share to the running back position. So not very high. I mean, again, they're next to the Commanders, the Bengals, the Cardinals, the Rams, Texans, Chargers. And again, on the other side of this, you've got teams like the Raiders and the Bears and the Broncos are all well over 24% target share. So that's a 10% higher rate. It's just one of those things to pay attention to. You hope that he gets the passing usage, but if he's also not getting the red zone usage, I can understand why maybe some people are a little bit leery about wanting to invest. Not as leery in wanting to invest as people have become about nuclear sludge Quentin Johnston. Now, admittedly, there are some people out there that are very high on Quentin Johnston. There are some people out there that believe that, again, it's just a matter of time. This opportunity's coming. It'll be there. But we've seen players get hurt. We've already seen Mike Williams injured. 15 total targets on the year thus far this year. No more than 2 receptions in any given game. No more than, 20 yards here in that last game. So really hasn't manifested itself the way that we would like to see. But it seems like there is some new information coming out. And you'll have to go find some of this analysis online because really we can look at the target separation data. He's number 57, average cushions 31. But one of the running theories online, the conspiracy theories, if you're really getting into the nitty gritty, is that tinfoil hat, is that he is getting open with regularity, but Justin Herbert has been very locked into his first read or his second read, but rarely is he making reads to the point that he gets to Quentin Johnston. Now, it's a logical statement to make. It seems plausible on paper. But in this courtroom, I don't buy it. Because I think that if you were that good, and we've seen Justin Herbert target anyone and everyone, you would think that more target share would be coming your way, especially as a first-round guy. And we've heard Coach speak come out saying, you know, we need to see more from him. We need him to step up. Here's a big opportunity. And he just necessarily hasn't yet. So are you subscribing to the theory that there's something that hasn't been revealed yet that's still veiled around the corner? Because as you and I have talked about, we're not the binary dynasty rankers. We don't say this guy's good and this guy's bad. There's this guy was supposed to be the next Ja'Marr Chase, but since then his ceiling has dropped to the point that he is now ceiling of this player comp, right?
Right. Absolutely. I think
Javal
comes. Oh no.
No, go. You're good. Keep going. Roll with it.
Okay, we're still here. I'm rolling. You kind of have to readjust your range of outcomes with him. I still think we're nearing halfway through the season. But I think one of the problems is we just haven't seen enough games where he's playing. But again, we've seen games where he has played and he's just not getting targeted. And I kind of agree with you that if he is someone that's worthwhile to be used in this offense, you know, there would be... Capital.
That is, you're getting garbled. You're getting garbled to the
I think
worst degree we've.
Want to hear me?
I think your Cat 6 cable is red hot right now. It's okay. Overloading. I'm gonna give you another chance here.
Can you hear me?
To speak. Yes, to speak on Quentin Johnston. Nope. You look like you're cutting out again. I think.
The NSA agent listening in here doesn't want me to reveal this information. So I think that's why my internet cuts out whenever I start talking about Quentin Johnston.
Right.
But I think we've got a little bit of radio science here from the NSA guy. So I just want to say, Quentin Johnston, we haven't seen the range of outcomes. He's he may not be in our case, but he is potentially maybe more like someone like Gabe Davis that he can break out later, have these boomer bust weeks, is definitely not a elite receiver, top five, someone not that you can statistically count on, probably someone for more best ball dynasty, right? He's out there, he's playing, you know, there are, you know, video clips on Twitter that people have stated that, look, he's not reading towards him and stuff like that. Well, there's not a lot of design plays utilizing Quentin Johnston's skill set. So that kind of gives you a cause for concern. Kellen Moore's, you know, came from, you know, the Cowboys offense, which was extremely dynamic and pass heavy, and they can't get Quentin Johnston open and utilized. I'm just concerned that, I think it's more concerning that he's just he's more of like we said, the Gabe Davises of the world, the maybe the lesser Mike Williams, you know, talking about Mike Williams gives you a, you know, 30-point game, and then he gives you 1-point game the next game. So it's one of those things. I think you just have to reevaluate what your view is on the player. They're not just completely abysmal. Now, if he goes throughout the entire season doing this, they definitely have more merit in that. But I think he's out there. He's going to be – he will get more attempts as he gets more accustomed to this offense. I just don't know if he is this elite-tier wide receiver in this Chargers offense that everyone had hoped to – get and it's not one of those things that, you know, that offense is going to buoy him into this elite tier. He gets just one of those booms.
Well, that was good. It got choppy at times. You know, if Alexander ends up with a black hood over his head in the back of a van later, we all know why. If you don't see him on the next episode. But with Quentin Johnston, the other thing I wanted to point this out, you look at Justin Herbert, we know the concerns with sort of the first read and not making his way through the progressions, but also Justin Herbert currently number four in the NFL in deep target attempt rate at 15.1%. So they are attempting to push the ball downfield, which is sort of a hallmark of his game. He's also a yak guy, which oftentimes is sort of that intermediate target range, and they need to get the ball in his hands. I haven't necessarily written him off yet, but based on where you're seeing him ranked, he's ranked right next to Treylon Burks. Now, I don't want to call anybody out, but I know a guy that's a fan of both of these guys equally, and they're both sitting in about the exact same spot. Wide receiver 46, wide receiver 47. Between these two guys, I would still go with Quentin Johnston because he's younger, still prefer the offense. I can't keep writing promissory notes on behalf of Treylon Burks. I know other people can. I'm not willing to write them. But you look at him right now amongst this group and sort of the players that are in value range with him, he's probably pressing towards a future second. Yeah, so he's right in line with a 2024 second. If I'm a contending roster in best ball, that's probably the place where I'm maybe the most inclined to consider doing this if I'm not cashing out my picks for a player that's going to help me win today. Like if I'm not buying veterans, because that's kind of what you have to do. You're trying to keep your roster young, but you also want to get competitive players, which are oftentimes veterans because you can't afford to buy up. But if you really have faith in a guy like Quentin Johnston, I think that there's other players out there that you can probably package together. And to be quite honest with you, I feel like the way that the state of Dynasty is going, people are going to have a more and more eroding level of faith. And he's probably going to continue to fall further. Like, to be honest with you, I don't know why he's 15 spots higher than Jalen Hyatt. Like, I actually don't know why is that? Like, I'm not really sure or why he's that much higher than Michael Wilson. Like, is it the first round draft capital? Is it the offense that he's in? Because he really hasn't done a thing yet. And so I think it's concerning in that sense, but I'm quite confident that if Josh Palmer continues to play well and Quentin Johnston continues to not get his opportunities, then we will see him fall. But I will say that one big splash performance, we know exactly what that's going to do, right?
Oh, the one, skyrocket.
Exactly. The one big splash performance, and I'm bringing it back this way, he's probably going to jump up to like the Jerry Jeudy range, I would imagine. Like if we get a game next week or his next game from Quentin Johnston, and it's, let's say, hypothetically, because he hasn't done this all year, 5 catches for 111 and a touchdown, I can almost assure you that it's going to be a question. Do I prefer Jerry Jeudy, who seems like the hot potato, or do I want Quentin Johnston, the guy that may have just put up a mirage performance? I don't know. But I kind of think that that's where he goes.
I agree. I think if he has a fantastic game, and again, he's on the...
I think your network has had it. I think the NSA has had it.
Tried it. Yeah.
Okay. So I want, okay, one last try, Alexander. Here you go. This is it. It's for all the marbles.
Again, I think he's playing on the field. I think the concern is that even though he's playing on the field, he's not seeing the snaps. I think, yeah, one big performance could easily buoy him because it would be confirmation bias based off of the draft capital and the situation.
It's amazing because it's almost as if you just went into a 2-minute drill to get the last take out and put yourself on 2X to get that done. All right, guys, I think that's going to wrap the show. Thank you guys for checking it out again. If you're on YouTube, we've been getting a lot of views. We'd love to convert some of you viewers that are returning viewers into subscribers. So if you guys have been enjoying the content that you are witnessing, let me change the screen here. Then come hit the subscribe button, join us for more content. We post everything weekly on this channel. We're going to continue doing podcasts as more of our tools are rolled out. We're going to demo those, provide those on the show as well to do more in-depth analysis sort of based within our rankings. Of course, guys, if you're listening on the podcast network, please rate and review these shows. It helps us a lot. We're trying to catch the fantasy footballers. Why every time it makes me, you know, they get like 761,000 plays a week. Obviously, if you guys go to the description down below, we're getting a lot of new members. Join the Discord channel. Link is in the description. It's a really fun group. I saw a guy jump in today and he was asking questions about a roster and everybody in the channel just came to the rescue. The guy had been in the Discord for 14 seconds and said, I need help with my roster. And everybody showed up like 15 mother gooses and helped him out. DynastyRankings.com, of course, go there, put in your email. Updates are to come. And I think that's it. And in the future, me and Alexander are going to work out his network connectivity issues. He was really good for 90% of the episode, but the 10% that mattered, I don't even think people could see your thumbs up. You look like a Roblox character right now. The 10% of the episode at the end was a little buffery in senses, but that's okay because most people are low on Quentin Johnson anyway. So anyways, guys, more content to come. So we will see you next Wednesday.